Number 40, Herbert Park in Bowles Bridge, only a few miles away from where we are right now. It's a little bit like the house in the Pixar film Up. You know, it's this kind of old and quaint property which is trying to resist the tide of 21st century modernity all around of it. But there are development plans that are gathering pace out in Bowles Bridge. And this Edwardian house of a curious revolutionary, which is the self-styled The O'Rahilly, it could be in its final weeks. The house was constructed, though, not as part of a regular housing scheme, but also as part of the largest exhibition ever witnessed in Ireland, which was the 1907 Irish International Fair, which is something we'll probably talk to Donal Fallon about in some time future, if not already. But I suppose the question is, Donal, can it survive 2020? Donal Fallon, of course, is here for another slot of Hidden Histories. There's a great romanticism about The O'Rahilly, even the name.
Yeah,
he wasn't christened The.
It's a great name, The O'Rahilly, and you know, it takes a certain confidence to, you know, label oneself with such a name, but this was a remarkably...
Like, I wouldn't be saying this is on the record with The Riley.
The O'Rahilly. This guy was a remarkable, colourful character, as the name suggests. Son of Ballylongford, County Kerry, and he died an incredibly poetic death, you know, in the laneways behind Moore Street in a hail of bullets during the 1916 Rising. He's a figure, it's difficult not to hold great admiration for him because he was against the Rising, he thought it was doomed to failure, but he still went ahead and he participated in it. And with kind of poetic license, William Butler Yeats took his words and placed them in one of his finest poems, where O'Rahilly tells us, "Because I helped to wind the clock, I've come to hear it strike." But his home, you know, in Bowles Bridge, rumours of its demise may be greatly exaggerated. It's up for debate this week among Dublin City Council. But who knows how this will all play out?
You mentioned that it takes a certain confidence to label yourself as The O'Rahilly, but there was other aspects of him that have certain confidence and cockiness, right down to his choice of car.
A man of means. He drove a beautiful car into the Rising, a French car. Now, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, and maybe you can help me on the way, but a Didion Bouton. Did I get that right?
Or roughly? Sounds about right.
Roughly, yeah. Right. Painted blue for France originally. He had it painted green for Ireland. And this kind of sports car, I mean, who was driving a sports car around in 1916, met its end on a rebel barricade. To have a car in itself back then was a peculiar thing.
I was going to say, there probably weren't many of them going around in 1916.
Liam Cosgrave, Taoiseach and son of W.T. Cosgrave, recounted that my father drove with the O'Rahilly to a meeting in Balbriggan once in O'Rahilly's car. He was the only Sinn Féiner with a car. W.T. had to get out and wipe the rain off the windscreen. There were no wipers back then. So everything from his house to his car, I mean, this man carried himself in a certain way. And he's such an enduring figure. For many, many years, there was a popular urban myth in Dublin that his car, along with the rubble of the Rising, was utilised in the construction of the Croke Park Terrace, known as Hill 16. You'll still sometimes hear it on occasion, you know, at a cold O'Byrne Cup night, someone will tell you, "We're standing on top of the O'Rahilly's car." But there's no truth in it on either ground. But it still says a lot about memory and how this guy O'Rahilly is remembered.
Yeah, so that was the car, but we're here to talk about the house, because that, as you said, is the topic of some debate this week. The house in Bowles Bridge is also, much like the car, it's a statement piece, isn't it?
And for anyone from Bowles Bridge, or anyone who's ever made the day trip out to the area, it was one off of a trio of really curious looking houses by Herbert Park. Beautiful kind of Edwardian style houses. And the story of the construction of them, I mean, they just look so weird today, and they even looked weird back then. The story of the construction of them is really as intriguing, I think, as the ongoing saga around the houses.
So all this goes back to what you described in the intro, the Irish International Fair, basically a World's Fair in 1907. Am I right in thinking that's the same one that resulted in the construction of what's now St. Stephen's Green Shopping Centre, this big glass palace?
These kind of strange... Well, Stephen's Green Shopping Centre, it's kind of fake news. You know, it's designed to look like an Edwardian glasshouse,
but
it's built in the 80s. But you're right, there was a beautiful glass house as part of it, and it was a really curious event. We see these things in America now all the time, you know, the World's Fair, kind of Irish International Exhibition. 3 million people, 2.75 million people passed through it, and its historian Ken Findlay, he calls it the biggest show in town, which is exactly what it was. And on one level, it was all about promoting Irish industry. You know, the big thing at the time was Dain Ten Éireann, you know, buy things that are made in Ireland, support Irish manufacturers. Mm. But on another, it was all about world commerce, you know, and the idea that we're going to bring the world to Ireland. So they still do this in America at World's Fairs. They construct kind of global villages, and it's all very strange.
It's almost like an Olympic village where basically they need to create the housing to deal with it, and then it's just housing for use, civilian.
Exactly. And some of the 1907 stuff that was built, you know, you wouldn't get away with it today. For example, they built a Somali village, and not only did they build a Somali village in Bowles Bridge, but they brought native people into it. And a newspaper at the time said a party of Somalis had been imported from British Somaliland, which is situated in the northeast of Africa. This village has been erected to represent the huts in which the natives live in their country. A schoolroom has also been built in which Somali children will be taught their lessons. Sounds absolutely
positively
grim.
That blows my mind. that as as recently as like 113 years ago, we were just importing, just transplanting.
Like people.
This country has such a history with plantations that we decided that just for, for an international fair, just as a curiosity, that we'd transplant people from Somalia.
And you could go and see the Somalis and the Chinese people and every, I mean, the world was literally brought to Balls Bridge for this obscure kind of world's fair.
That's nuts. That's just, right, we're going to have to come back to that one another day as well. The to-do list out of this lot is going nuts. Anyway, so this was all made happen. Obviously, world's fairs, they don't come cheaply, and all the housing and all of that, it doesn't come cheap. Yeah. It was all made happen by a tycoon of the day.
Yeah, and amidst all the kind of faux villages and huts and, you know, Somali people, the main emphasis of the whole thing was really Irish domestic industry. And the central figure in making it happen was William Martin Murphy. I mean, William Martin Murphy, successful Irish media mogul, the Irish Independent, the Sunday Independent, the Evening Herald, the Irish Catholic, and you name it, he owned it. Transportation mogul, the rail network, the trams in Dublin, nationalist MP in Westminster once upon a time, and still 6 years away from the lockout.
Yes, which is kind of what people remember his
name for. Exactly, which would put him into the collective memory of Dublin for all the wrong reasons. But he kind of embodied this very successful Irish nationalist Catholic businessman and the belief that Ireland could be a world player on the world stage and Irish industry could grow.
So you didn't have to be in the pocket of the empire to make things happen. Basically.
Exactly. You could do it yourself. I mean, they even offered him a knighthood after this thing. It was so successful. And he turned it down as an Irish nationalist because Ireland wasn't given home rule. So these houses are built as part of this big fair. And they're built with Irish material, Irish design, Irish hands. And I mean, that's the spirit of the fair, isn't it? Look what we can build with our own material, our own stuff. Mm. And basically, that house, O'Rahilly's house, along with a fountain and a bandstand in Herbert Park, they're basically the only remnants of this fair that 3 million people went to. And in 1910, the fair was over for 3 years. The houses are still sitting there. And in moves the O'Rahilly, together with his wife, Nancy.
And speaking of his wife, Nancy, and I suppose it's probably in keeping with a man of the sort of the means that he is, he married a woman of fairly considerable means as well.
You're driving a fancy French sports car around the country and everything else. I mean, O'Rahilly, he does nothing by halves. Yeah. He marries.
It's not a very romantic date if you have to keep getting out to wipe the rain off the windscreen.
Absolutely. He marries Nancy, born on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, the daughter of a wealthy industrialist, though of Irish blood. And this kind of showpiece house, if you will, in Balls Bridge becomes their residence. And there's brilliant pictures. I mean, images just abound of, you know, the O'Rahilly in his uniform, his military uniform, and the kids enjoying its garden. The garden's already gone, actually, in the process of redevelopment. But it was this kind of weirdly idyllic home, you know, a privileged life. They even had two servants. And then a couple of miles away, you had some of the worst tenements in Europe. Mm. So it's quite remarkable to put it kind of side by side. But this unlikely house became O'Rahilly's home.
And there is a little bit of a link directly to the Rising as well, because when he's there lying, you know, in a hail of bullets and lying and breathing his last breaths in 1916, he writes a letter to Nancy. And of course, the letter is addressed to this address, number 40 Herbert Park.
He dies an incredibly poetic death. I mean, he travels around Ireland the day before the Rising, telling people it's off. Don't go out. We can't win. Don't have enough weapons, please don't come out. And then when it happens, he decides, well, I better go along anyway. You know, these are my friends and I don't agree with the decision, but I'm going to be there.
And what if we win?
And what if we win? Exactly. I want the medal. But as they're evacuating the GPO, the chaos of leaving the GPO, O'Rahilly is gunned down in the laneways by Moore Street. And as he lies there dying, I mean, this is Hollywood stuff, he pens this note to his beloved. Written after I was shot, darling Nancy, I was shot leading a rush up Moore Street and took refuge in a doorway. While I was there, I heard the men pointing out where I was and made a bolt for the laneway I'm in now. I got more than one bullet, I think. Tons and tons of love, dearie, to you and the boys, Nell and Anna. It was a good fight anyhow. Please deliver this to Nanny O'Rahilly, 40 Herbert Park, Dublin. Goodbye, darling. I just love those words. You know, it was a good fight anyhow. It was worth getting involved in. And the fact that that letter is written to that, you know, very same house, I think is astonishing in itself.
And even after he died, and obviously he died in very unfortunate and very poetic circumstances, as you mentioned, but the house was still sort of involved in the political saga that followed afterwards.
As often happens, I mean, the widows of people who are executed in 1916, they are killed in 1916, they continue to play a very active role. And this house, Herbert Park, it's used by the Dáil. Basically, the Dáil was an underground government throughout the War of Independence.
Yeah.
Like the French government during the Second World War, you're meeting wherever you can meet. And they often used that house. It was used by the IRA as well. Oscar Traynor, later Fianna Fáil minister and president of the FAI, he remembered a meeting in that house attended by De Valera and Michael Collins and others, where Dev suggested that they burn down the custom house, that they should do some big kind of action on that scale that would be broadcast across the world. So, I mean, one of the most daring actions, the last significant action of the War of Independence in Ireland, the burning of the Custom House, that idea, that begins around the table in Herbert Park.
There's a theory, by the way, that the brigade that burnt down or attempted to burn down the Custom House 100 years ago next year, some of the members of it, I think, were related to Dara O'Brien, who is now the Fianna Fáil minister, who actually runs the department that's based in that very
Brilliant.
Building. We'll talk about it some other day. Anyway, so we're talking about 40 Herbert Park, and obviously its future now, as of this week, is very much up in the air.
Yeah, and I mean, the house has fallen into disrepair. That is a fact. But I mean, the proposed new development, 40 Park, as it's called, would see its demolition. And I think it's worth saying, I'm not like what is proposed is a very, very impressive development. Its architectural plans are online that provide a lot of new apartments. And look, who could sit here and deny this city needs apartments and it needs apartments in abundance and building is good. But does 40 Herbert Park have to go, you know, in the process? That's the great question. Now, in August, it was reported that Dublin City Council advised an Bord Pleanála to permit the apartments. But interestingly, the Department of Culture, Heritage and the Gaeltacht said it didn't support the removal of the houses, quote, as it removes 20th century typologies that are fully viable and their loss may be regarded as undermining local character and identity of the historic village of Ballsbridge. So there's no great agreement on this. And now there seems to be kind of voices of discontent within the council among councillors. And it's back on the agenda once again. So we began this year fighting with each other about the black and tans, you know, going out the other side of the crisis, and we're back fighting about the past, thankfully. But a bit like O'Rahilly himself, you know, this house, it may surprise us yet.
Well, look, if we weren't fighting about the past, what else would we have to talk about at this slot on a Sunday? But look, there's been plenty of apartment developments in Ballsbridge before that have been turned down because of what they would do that might be out of character. So you never know, there might be still home for number 40 Herbert Park yet. Donald Fallon is a historian. He's the author of the Come Here To Me books, and he's the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast. We'll be right back.